Hello, Dialoguers, and welcome back to the Dialogue Podcast. I'm Asande, your host, a second-year medical student. My best friend and co-host, Rahil, will not be joining me today, but he's going to be back in the part two of this series. He is a second-year medical microbiology student. But I have two very special guests with me here, the host of Two Maths Stuck in Conversation. Matthew, do you guys want to introduce yourselves?
Yeah, let's go for it. You start.
Okay. I'm Matthew Hector. I am a second year information systems student at UCT. That's my friend Matthew.
Hi, I'm Matthew Gallant. I'm a second year medical student at UCT. I actually study with Asande over here, sadly.
Yeah. Asande and I are rivals. We're having a bit of a competition running.
We are. And I think Matthew being beaten.
I am the coach for Matthew Hector. I'm going to sort of teach him how to run a 10K faster than Asande.
That's
going
to
be an interesting situation. It's going to be fun. So yes, we have a podcast called Two Maths Stuck in Conversation, where we talk a lot of nonsense, talk about the world, talk about life, talk about school, everything under the sun we talk about. You can find us at Two Maths Stuck in Conversation. That's our Instagram. Find us on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, everywhere this podcast you're listening to is, you'll find ours. Go check it out, please.
I would recommend that you guys check it out. It is amazing, funny, conversational, topical. But jumping into our topic today, we're talking a lot about social media, burnout, creativity. And, you know, recently I noticed that Chrissy Teigen posted an image on Instagram. It was her and John Legend. It was like a number of images, you know, black and white. Everything looked sad and very doom and gloom, and she announced that, I don't know if it was like a miscarriage or stillbirth, but basically the point is that she lost the baby that she was pregnant with at that time. So a lot of people have criticized her. They're like, okay, well, how can you post that on like social media? Like, how do you find the time to pose for pictures when you just like had a miscarriage or a stillbirth or whatever? And I think I need to pause and say that I do send my condolences to her, but let's start with Hector as an informatics student.
Okay. Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on the moments people should and shouldn't share on social media? And I'm not really asking you to like police Chrissy Teigen. I'm basically being like, why would someone share this moment? And do you think social media was made for private moments like these?
So it's a tricky question to answer. And actually, when I read the question for the first time, I had to sort of calm myself down, because there's so many different aspects that come into play here. But I think it's just a situation of it's a blurred line type of thing, because social media influencers, they live their lives online. Excuse my dogs. And you see, they create this scenario where fans almost become involved with their lives, and they become a part of their lives because they address them in stories and tweets like, oh, I'm speaking to you. And you get this impression like you humanize the celebrity, you bring them down to earth, and we are on the same level. And like, it creates this problem where, or you could call it a problem, where the celebrities overshare, but the fans sort of get over involved in their lives. And so, you know, there's I saw the other day on Instagram, I don't know if you surely know Lasizwe. She is a South African influencer, quite famous. His father passed away, rest in peace, and he posted pics of him crying and like at the funeral mourning. And I didn't know how to feel about it, because firstly, who takes pictures at a funeral?
I've seen that. I've seen people take pictures of themselves crying, and they have this long, beautiful message, and I'm like, beautiful message.
Yeah.
But I would never post a picture of me like in.
No, yeah.
I feel like that's slightly different. I feel like there's some people who post like, oh, I had a breakdown, here's a picture of me crying. But it's something just different when it's a serious situation like a funeral, or Chrissy Teigen's posting of a miscarriage, or the loss of a baby. I feel like that's a very different moment to me personally crying in my room. And I'm like, I'm going to take a selfie and send that through. I just wonder, in a moment of such strong emotions and heartbreak. I do wonder who takes the photos, and do you say, please take a photo of me while I'm in the state? But to talk about whether
it's
not
21 hours.
Thanks, Siri. to talk about whether or not it's good to share. Yes, there's oversharing, but I think it's really powerful that you shared that message. As a medical student, you'll know that not like most births happen, but there are births that don't happen. There are pregnancies that are unsuccessful, and that sort of doesn't get talked about a lot, and doesn't get talked about a lot in the media, especially by celebrities. And so it is very powerful when someone with such such a large following as she and her husband have shared such a vulnerable thing, and there will be so many people that can relate with that experience. Many couples, many mothers will be able to relate with that experience, and that's really powerful to create a sort of a community. So sharing it, I don't think will do any harm.
Yeah, indeed.
So I think
I also don't particularly care.
But I think it was Beyonce and Michelle Obama who have also had multiple miscarriages and been quite open about that. But with Michelle Obama, I think it only comes out in a book or an interview. I can't exactly remember the details. And with Beyonce, same thing. It came out in a few interviews here and there that, you know, she had actually had a miscarriage, whatever, whatever. So I guess what I'm saying is, okay, this is a bit of my personal choice speaking, but I'm just not sure if an immediate Instagram post, when even I'm in shambles, you know, I don't know if it like, I think it normalizes it, like Gallants was saying, but on the personal level, I think when you put something out there like that, when you're still in the feels, like, I don't think you're in the state to properly respond to people's questions and comments, and not that it's her job to do so, but if she did, it would kind of provide a feedback thing, like, you know what I mean? So when Beyonce and Michelle put it out there at the later stages of having gotten over everything, they could elaborate at great depth about how they felt about the lack of women who said this. Like, Michelle was talking about how you think your body isn't working properly, and, or like, she had time to digest everything so that she could kind of impart the complete experience to the audience, and people were like, wow. Whereas now it's kind of like shock value. And
yeah,
you know what I mean? Mm. Like, I just... How do you guys feel about that?
I think shock value works in their favor because, you know, any publicity is good publicity. But that being said, I don't think they do it intentionally. I think it's more a matter of social media is, it's so quick to make a quick post and not think about it and not realize the impact of it. And a lot of things get posted, which we don't think about. It's probably got more to do with not thinking before you post sort of thing.
I also think that in her situation is different. So in looking at this question, I decided to look at her Instagram page and follow it up. And for the last, this entire sort of carrying this baby, this entire pregnancy, she's been posting about her experience and all things about that. She even posted about when there was a complication and she was like, I'm going to have to go to the hospital and be there for a while longer. So she was constantly updating everyone. And that brings me to a point where it's like, how do you leave the hospital without the baby and the public doesn't know? And they're going to raise questions and you have to talk about it. Whereas something with like Beyonce that you just mentioned, I didn't even know she had a miscarriage. So if they don't even know you're pregnant and you don't sort of publicize that, it becomes easier to be able to have those private moments and then sort of give you that fully digested, fully worked through experience of this is how my miscarriage went, these are my emotions, these are my thoughts. When it's a more private thing, but something like that was so public, it just raised questions. If you didn't post a picture of the living baby after the intervention.
That's really true. I remember I was watching something about Chrissy Teigen and she was talking about her previous pregnancies. And as you guys know, like during vaginal childbirth, like you have like this strip of flesh that like divides the two cavities. It starts with the P. Matthew, what's the word?
What's this?
The thing, the flesh, it starts with the P and divides the vaginal and anal cavities.
I think about the perineum.
Perineum, yes. I nearly say peritoneum and I know it's never that.
It's not the peritoneum. The peritoneum, I'd be worried. That's peritoneum is like the inside of your abdominal. Yeah. Yeah.
So the perineum can rip, and she was very open about how hers literally ripped to like from vagina to anal, like the whole thing just ripped open. And then that happens to a lot of women. So I really appreciated how she like spoke about it, because I was like, you know, that's actually something you need to consider when you're about to like, you know, choose the mode of delivery or whatever. But so if you look at it in that light, I guess she's always been one of those like normalized pregnancy and all its like little things kind of warrior. But now that we're talking about social media, what socials are you guys on? And how much time per day are you spending on it in this back period?
Socials. Yeah, go for it. Frequent socials that I use, WhatsApp for sure, Instagram. Of recent, I've taken up TikTok, but not much. I almost never use it. I also use Reddit from time to time to find certain Reddit pages that are very helpful for me. But those are my main socials. And YouTube, I guess, that if you want to count that as a social. It's more social than something like Netflix, for example. So those are my socials. And I'm spending a lot of hours getting back, because there's not much else to do. But on campus, I spend about 2 hours on my phone every day. That's a mix between a work and play.
For me, I actually, I'm not on WhatsApp at the moment. Which let me tell you, refreshing. I spend a lot of time on Instagram and Snapchat. I do a lot of Reddit as well. Reddit is almost as addictive as any other social media. But what I'm actually spending most of my time on is YouTube. And, you know, YouTube knows how to keep you entertained. But I was actually surprised. I checked my phone screen time and it said that I'm only spending like an hour per social media per day. Which isn't that bad. An hour max.
So like 6 hours a day, you know? Like, you break it up, your screen time is 6 hours and you're like 6-7 hours. But it's like only no, 1 hour per day.
Listen to what I say. What about you, Sunny?
What about me? I have Instagram, Twitter, WhatsApp, and YouTube. I have Quora. I love Quora. So... So, I recently actually...
Quora is not like Reddit.
Quora is slightly more wholesome, you know what I mean? So, I recently deleted Instagram because I was spending way too much time there. And it's like, you realize how addicted you've become during back when you open your phone and you scroll to where the Instagram app usually is, and then boom, it's not there. And it's like, I can't believe I just looked for that. But yeah, I'd say that during back, I wouldn't be surprised if I found that I was spending 3 hours on the gram. YouTube
alone,
yeah,
3 hours on the gram alone.
I wouldn't be surprised if that was the number, you know, like I think that's the number. WhatsApp, I think that comes to about an hour, mostly replying to people. YouTube actually cannot keep me hooked because the algorithm fails to keep me entertained. It's so awkward because the moment I watch running stuff, all it gives me is running stuff, and I'm like, okay, but today I actually feel like political stuff, and I watch political stuff, and then all it gives me is, like, it just keeps on giving me binaries, and it never suits my day-to-day mood change. So I actually have to go out there and, like...
Not giving that enough data.
Actually, what I used to do on YouTube when I was younger is I used to deliberately click on videos I hated so I could confuse the algorithm because I didn't want it to know my deepest, darkest desires.
That sounds like so many issues.
But I used to do, like, I just used to intentionally not click on things.
You see? Like, the thought of the algorithm knowing my thoughts was just very scary. I wanted to keep it on its toes, and I succeeded for quite a while. And now that I'm allowing it to know who I am, it's failing terribly. But basically, back to social media. Have you guys ever flirted on the gram, DM'd someone, asked them out?
That's a loaded question.
Just yes or no. You don't have to tell us the name or how.
This is your department, mate. I don't do these things. This is all on you.
Those are utter lies, but I'll save you. I'll save you, Flynn.
That's so.
For me, there's this cool thing, like phenomenon on Instagram, where if you want to flirt with someone, you just like many of their posts. And then that they get the message and I do that quite often, and it has sometimes escalated to like, oh, let's have a conversation. But yeah, conversations is one thing. It stops there usually, I have. I know Grant probably has. What about you? Where are you going with this?
Yeah, I don't know. What's the emoji? What's going on?
What's the move? I just want to expose us. I'm interested to see. If you
so listen to our podcast, you want to expose us like ourselves, like, stuck in conversation on Instagram and on YouTube and everywhere else.
I'm just wondering because it'd be interesting to see if using like social media just to scroll through profiles or if you actually like, you know, pursuing your interests, because a lot of people feel like social media isn't the place to be asking someone out.
I think it is. I think a lot of people do get conversation started and then the conversation moves to a more appropriate personalized platform like WhatsApp, for example, or even Snapchat, apparently, because, you know, you can never have evidence of your conversions.
That's a lie. You know, I heard that when I was like in grade 9, we were told that like everything that you do is on the internet, even if you do this on your phone, it is there. So when people tell me there's no evidence of the conversation, I'm like, you're lying. It is there.
Snapchat monitors the camera, because I read a news article once where Snapchat says they've seen some of the things that the Snapchat camera has like viewed. And they even said things like, we understand those in the toilet snaps. And I was like, whoa. But I read that article a while ago. So let's take it as a paraphrasing situation. But I think the dynamic has changed, actually. I think it's shifted to dating online. Let's use those algorithms for good. Let's use the data for good. Although I still personally believe you, like when I was in high school, I would have said you can definitely relationship online. I had.
Oh yeah, you definitely said that back
stop,
in high school.
Stop! Stop!
Every bio lesson.
I've learned that who someone is online or over the phone is completely different to who they are in person. But that's just my opinion.
Yeah, you can be calculated online. Like you can word your joke perfectly. You can get everything down to the letter, to the emoji. And that's just not who you are.
Did we release that episode yet?
No, I'm editing it right now. So check it out at Two Matt Stuck in Conversation on Instagram and YouTube.
How many times?
So I remember in high school, actually, Matthew and I were having an interesting conversation yesterday, and he didn't understand how I'd been in a relationship but never kissed the person. And the thing is, I was in a long distance relationship because we didn't meet on social media, we met at a science fair. And then, you know, everyone goes home from the science fair and it's like, okay, go home to your town, 130 kilometers away from each other. So that was the vibe. So social media was like the way of keeping in touch. But it became obvious that it really, to me, like, unless you spend enough time in person, social media doesn't work as the clutch. You know what I mean? Like, you can't be getting to know each other on social media. It doesn't work for me. But
yeah, there's a great Netflix movie. I forget the name. I was trying to find it now. Where this girl is like catfishing this boy, and they develop a loser. That's the one. Sierra Burgess
is a loser.
Our brains
are connected, mate.
There's only one movie like that, but it talks about how you can develop a proper relationship over the phone without seeing the person or interacting with the person. It's possible. So I believe you. I relate to you. You're not crazy.
I remember the joke at school used to be like, when is the Sunday going to get HD action? As in like, in life, like high definition. It was like the running joke of the end of a trick.
Why are you exposing yourself like this on the internet? Can you explain?
Still dating the same person from high school.
No, we broke up at the end of matric.
My apologies.
many condolences. Question. I just like to clarify for the audience. Sunday, did you ever meet up with your boyfriend in person?
If there wasn't like an annual science fair, then no. If there was an annual science fair, we'd both enter so you could bump into each other.
Answer the question. Did you meet up with your boyfriend? Yes or no? When he was your boyfriend,
were you
did
you meet up with him?
Once.
Okay. Then my statement still stands. Did you not get someone when in a relationship with him?
Galant's actually revealing his own truths right now.
He is actually. You know, yeah. Galant, he thinks he's got you, but he's actually revealing himself. Anyways.
I'd like to say, have you ever watched a Netflix movie, right? Like, it's just a common thing that you kiss your significant other, if that is your preference, of course. But I'm just saying, I know that's Asante's preference, because Asante was not talking about it.
But the thing is, what happened is, let's just say we had very different personalities. So we were going in very different paces in our heads, you know what I mean? Because as soon as I got to uni, he's a year above me. So when I got to my first year, he was entering his second year. Suddenly he was talking about like big things when we had not even done the small things. And I was like, no, not happening. Independent woman. Thank you.
Calm down.
No. So I think we just had very different paces in our heads.
Don't try to cuff me. Like, no.
No. Yeah. But yeah, where I'm going with this is, you know, the social dilemma in Netflix, how they show
the
boy being manipulated by like the three guys and how they use like the girl crush as like a way of conveying the message. So I've noticed that whenever I go to a post that is from a page that my crush and I both follow, his name always comes up first in the liked list without fail. It'll be like crush and others have liked this post. And I'm like, I don't know if Instagram is aware that I've Googled his profile so many times, or that whenever I see like a picture that he posted, that my interaction time increases. And apparently Mark Zuckerberg was like spying people through the camera. So maybe they saw my freaking pupils dilate and they were like, this girl likes this person. So I'm going to put his name as the first one. Have you guys ever had that? And do you suspect that to be true?
As you can do interactive profiles. So that could not just like who you like, because that person's like page might have zero likes. But like if you constantly send them memes or images via Instagram or talk to them via the DM section, they will monitor that as like a top five candidate. So for example, Vivek and I follow something, because I'm constantly interacting with Instagram, it would rather put his name first than someone else's name. Or it depends on like the variations of posts. If I send someone a constant thing from one page, then their name will pop up first. So yes, it does watch who you interact with more than like it's your crush. It just so happens to be that you open up a crush's page a lot. And that's why it's always first.
What I find particularly strange is if I go to my For You page, I'm recommended boys that I find attractive. How in the world does it know what I find attractive? That's so clearly
that,
there's
that
got
is
some
insane.
There has to be some facial tracking technology going on there. And it picks up what I like. It shows me videos of like Mercedes-Benz. I like those cars, so it shows me a lot of those. It shows me like Apple products. It likes, it knows what I like. And I'm fine with that because content, we love it. But it's actually really scary how much they actually track. Like if you download Facebook on the new iOS, it'll ask you, can we track your ads? Can we see your Bluetooth devices? Can we access your Wi-Fi network? Because they want to see who else is around you and what else you're interacting with. It's
even weirder. But ads, talking about ads, a month or two ago, I was trying to find new running shoes, right? And so my Instagram Explore page updated with which brand I was checking out. So if I was checking out Hokas and New Balances, my Explore page was showing me Hokas and New Balances. And then suddenly it just became Nikes, all Nike. And then suddenly it was Nike Athletes. And it just became a whole Nike branded Explore page. Which I approve of, but still, Nike, please sponsor me.
What happened to me the one day is I played like a little filter game on Instagram where like guess the Jacob Collier lyric, and I did like four or five of those. And then when I opened my Spotify the next day, they're like, we think you love Jacob Collier. I was like, no, this is a bit too suspicious.
Yeah, they said you
intentionally listened to Billy Ray Cyrus.
I'm going to take your horse. Like, I just recommend your boys on like horses from now on your Explore page, because that's what you're into. You like country boys. Like, even just sells your data. That's what it is. And Google Ads just makes it so much easier, because most ad networks are funded through Google, the ads feature.
You know, my problem is, so we're talking about how like if you DM someone for a long time, or like if you have an interaction with their post for a long time, like Instagram will know to throw that name at you. But his name has been thrown at me from since I started following him. And granted, I followed him because I was on a mission to, like, you know, So, from the beginning, the mission was not accomplished. If I was in a planet living on the moon, I basically crash landed in the middle of the ocean, everything imploded, nobody saw it happening, and everyone's like, where the hell did you go? But anyways.
Good thing nobody saw. That's, anyway, moving on.
No, we all saw a crash and burn under the entry. We all did.
No, I think nobody saw me crash and burn, but you never know who the person was like talking to about things. So you could be walking around campus and people know, but you just think that they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But back to the social dilemma. So Jaron Lanier, very interesting guy. He's actually also a classical musician, I think that's the word. And he's a collector of rare instruments, of which he has 1 to 2,000. But anyways, he has
1 to 2,000. Is that the range?
Not just any instruments, rare instruments.
I don't have 2,000 anything.
You've got 2,000 problems.
Okay, so the question here was, I was talking to a friend who was saying that he didn't like how the whole scene was playing out, where they had those three guys manipulating this boy, because he felt like an algorithm doesn't have the intent for ill harm. It does what you've tasked it to do, collect information, improve the user experience, and the byproduct of that is keeping someone on Instagram for longer. It's not necessarily the algorithm being like, I am going to control your every move. So he didn't really like how it was just misleadingly dystopian. And I guess where I'm going with this is, do you agree with that? And if yes, do you think there's a way to code for good?
I have an answer to this when I was Googling, and I feel like I need to put this out first because it will guide the conversation. Do you guys know about Tay?
Tay.
What?
Tay, so Twitter made a bot called Tay 4 years ago, right? And there's this AI bot that could make its own tweets, comment on posts, and interact with Twitter. And the idea was, we're going to create this force for good that users can interact with, and we can create a community around Tay. And so Tay was very smart. She could sort of tweet things, be funny, catch up on sort of what's trending and what's not trending, and make really cool interactions. But she also had this feature called, I'm missing the name, but it's sort of like, it's like a mimicking thing. So if people send tweets through to her, and she they kept tagging her in it, she would sort of mimic that tweet because she would think that's popular and funny and what everyone's into. So it started off very good. Very good conversations, very good comedy, and everyone thought, yay, this bot works. It's great. Have you guys heard of Godwin's Law?
No.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's Godwin's Law of Computing, which is sort of like Moore's Law, but different. So Godwin's Law basically says that as long as an internet discussion goes on, the longer a discussion online goes on, the greater the chance that there's going to be a conversation about Nazis and Hitler. So basically, this law is that the conversation goes on for long, it will eventually, there will be a reference to Nazis and Hitler. And that's what happened with Tay. So people started sending her tweets that were racist and inflammatory, and she picked up on it and then started making racist and inflammatory quotes, telling people, like, we need to kill this white person because of Black Lives Matter, and using derogatory terms and talking about Hitler. And it got really wild. And then Twitter had to shut it down. So the point I'm talking about Tay is, Tay was never programmed to know what inappropriate behavior was. She was programmed for good. It's just that people must use this. So code will always do what code is meant to do, which is to facilitate a conversation, to gain attention, to be funny, and do what think the masses will want to do. People just misuse it. So that's my point on Tay.
That is exactly what I wanted to bring up, is the idea of constructivism versus determinism. So I don't think you can really code for good or bold anything for good or bad, because it's all good and well to make something with good intent. There will always be one person who will take that resource and flip the switch and do with it whatever they want. This happens, like, for example, in the military, the US military, rather, they're always taking these innovative inventions to use it for war. So it's about, you can try and make something have a certain purpose, but that purpose is always shifted when it's launched.
Very, very interesting. Anyways, So we were talking about the theory that the conversation will end up being about Nazis, Hitler, racism, and how Tay ended up actually being more destructive in suggestions and comments. But my thing is, I noticed that you guys are both on Reddit, and I feel like compared to Quora, Reddit, 8chan, 4chan, those are the ones where the conversations can get very weird, very polarizing, and very QAnon conspiracy very quickly. So have you ever come across conspiracy theories on Reddit? If you did, how did you counter them? And do you think that they're increasing in frequency?
Command?
Yes.
Okay, tell me about your experiences, please, because I'm really curious right now.
Dude, it's like, listen, you'll find the conspiracy theories if you go into any, like, subreddit and then just click controversial. They made a button to find the controversial topics of any subreddit, right? You just have to use your own brain. Like, you can see sometimes that the argument they're making is just inflammatory for the sake of being inflammatory, or this is actually a real counter argument. You just have to use your intuition. But the reason I think there's more sort of alternative arguments for things on Reddit, 4chan, etc., is because there's just less regulation. Something like Twitter or Instagram is highly regulated. For example, Donald Trump got he and his wife contracted coronavirus, and that news came out yesterday as of this recording. And people on Twitter were saying that they hope he dies. And that is very much against Twitter's policy, because they don't they don't want people to tweet about things that would say, like, kill people, harm other people. They're very anti-violence in that sense. So they had to remove tweets like that. So it's monitored there. Yet they allow porn on Twitter. It's weird.
You know that.
You know, I think people need
it's a highly debated topic about Twitter.
On that note, I have a friend who retweets very graphic images. And I feel like you shouldn't be doing that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to scroll through my Twitter timeline and see someone's... Yeah, no. I don't like that. I
unfollow that. That's when you say it's your phone, it's your data, you block them. That's a quote from Patricia DeLille.
Oh, that was the best thing. We went to a news conference, Hector and I. Daily Maverick news conference from 2 years ago, 2018. And Patricia DeLille, they asked her about what you do with haters who comment on your tweets. And she says, you know what? It's my phone. It's my money. It's my daughter. I block you. And I thought that was the greatest thing I've ever heard. My life changed that day. I just block people now. It's brilliant.
You know, I was reading Vizzy Andre, so he has a book, forget the name, but he's basically into philosophy and law. And he was writing about blocking people, like blocking the haters on his profile, because people were saying that he stands for free speech and he interprets political correctness as a lack of free speech, so why is he blocking the haters? And he said that there's an interesting intersection of law and property. Like, if you think about it, someone's Instagram page is their property. So they have the right to moderate what gets said on their turf. But you can go and say whatever you want on your Instagram page. You can go and at them and be like, Advizy Andre, I hate your page. Nobody can remove that. It's free speech. But once you go into someone's property, they have the reign over what should be said and what shouldn't be said. I think that made a lot of sense. But unfortunately, it was still ironic because he's still very much say whatever you want. And then that comes off very weirdly when you then block people who have different opinions about you.
I think that's basically what Patricia DeLille was trying to say that day. Like, her page is her property. You can do whatever you want on your page, but don't come to her post and then comment on her post inflammatory things. So I like the idea of my page is my property. There are people who say, don't take my images and use them for promotional, this is my stuff. Because people like to do that. They go on Instagram, screenshot the images, and then use it for marketing. It's your property. You can say whatever you want, and you can monitor the conversation there, but you can't sort of monitor someone else's page. Makes sense.
Okay. I want to go back quickly to something Gallant said. He was like, you have to use your brain to see what's inflammatory. Now, if QAnon were to pop up on my page, which has never happened, and they were like, Trump is fighting the deep state, I'm aware that those things are created to divide people, basically, and influence political outcomes. In fact, not that QAnon is Russian, I'm not saying that, but I read that the aim of Russian interference isn't to get you to believe in something, is to get you to lose your trust in everything. And they were showing that African Americans were the most targeted, like, proportion of the electorates. And what they were doing was they were saying, do you think America really cares about you? They enslaved you. The election system is not a way of participating in government. So there's all these very politically activist looking things, but it was actually just a way to get people to distrust the system so much that they lose the want, the will to vote. And then, you know, what happened to the polls, you know, now we know what happened. But that's quite interesting for me. So, moving on. Last year, I declined studying on my iPad because I had seen claims, articles, studies that said that the blue light interferes with the assimilation of information to your hippocampus. And a lot of studies say that the more time you spend on social media, the worse the impact on your short-term memory, which is why I was like, Instagram needs to go for a while. So have you guys noticed a correlation between the amount of time you spend on social media and your ability to tackle course? And is it something you consciously control for?
I study on an iPad almost exclusively. I don't use paper. And I've been going through 2 years of medical and I've been doing pretty well. So I don't know how much I believe the lack of Grant, memory.
Your iPad is set up specifically so that you don't really have social media.
Yeah, I know about the blue light thing. I think blue light, but like other things like white set point. Like I know the iPads have a feature where you can change the white balance, and that's a massive game changer. It sets the white balance to the actual tone of your room, versus a sterile white light, which is what sort of keeps you awake at night. So it sort of changes the white balance, and you can put night shift on, and you can do all those things. But talking about time wasting and short term memory, my iPad does not have any social media on it. It's a strictly work machine. It has work applications. It has YouTube, but I set it to my university sort of email address that it's just work content. Like there's no fun on the iPad because when I work, I don't want to get notifications. I want the iPad to basically be this equivalent of a book, so I can put my phone away and not get notifications. So that helps. Social media does distract me though. Sometimes when things are tough, it's just easy to pull out your phone and then scroll through Instagram or flick through TikTok, open up a YouTube video, then to do your work. So I do find sometimes I have to either delete it, throw my phone in like a corner somewhere and turn it off just to keep focused. So I definitely feel the idea like it definitely does shorten your attention span or just hampers your ability to focus and get into a state of flow. That's definitely something it does. So I can agree with that. Social media. Yeah.
As for issues with blue light, I don't ever really feel affected by that, although I do use that, they call it True Tone, which is what Galan spoke about, where the phone and the iPad adapts to the light in your room. I use that, and I use automatic night shift, so it creates the yellow tone across the screens.
Yeah, it takes out the blue light.
Yeah, and the only time I really feel that is when I have a headache or when I'm doing an all-nighter, which I no longer do because it's painful.
The Macs also have two-tone and night shift as well, by the way.
Yeah. Look at the marketer.
Apple Peace wants me. And right.
I have issues with, like, I'm not diagnosed with it, but I'm pretty sure I have ADD. So I'm very easily lose track of time. I struggle to stay focused. So for me, I have a big issue with just five more minutes, and then like an hour later, I'm still on YouTube or whatever. So I have to use the screen time features that stop me after a certain period of time to keep myself in control and to keep my attention as well.
So I'm in the same boat with Gaddens. I've noticed people have WhatsApp on their Macs or on their laptops, and I never went for that because I felt like the moment you're studying and you see the little icon at the bottom, you're like, let me just go check. So I've never had WhatsApp on anything other than my phone. And when I am studying, like my phone being there doesn't disrupt me because it's kind of like I'm in the zone, I'm doing this thing. But when you start getting fatigued or like burnt out towards the end of the term, your phone being there, like, let me just escape quickly. So then you have to hide it. So, like, if I'm saying, I'll just pop it in my pencil case, close the pencil case, you kind of forget that it's there. Or what I used to do is, like, I would just go to a random room in the house and put it under the sheets. So then as a result, when I'm done studying, I spend all this time going through all the different beds, being like, which one has my phone? I don't know why I do that.
So it's like, I'm just really confused about life.
No, I see, it's very easy for you to lose things in your pencil bag.
No, it's not that. It's just that I could put them in my pencil bag. But sometimes, like, you want your phone so far away from you and you want to forget where you put it. So just put it under a random sheet cover in the house and then spend, like, a whole 30 minutes looking for it.
Honey, no, because I'm scared someone's going to throw up the sheet and there goes my phone. And that's just dangerous. It's too expensive to, like, just leave around somewhere.
But, yeah, I remember, personally, from my schooling years and first year, the distraction of social media was never a problem for me. Like, when test period came around and I was stressed enough to know that this is the mark I want and I need to work for it, I never got distracted. Like, I would work for stretches on end and then go on my phone for, like, 15 minutes. One YouTube video about college and maybe a few WhatsApp responses and I'm done and back to work. But I've noticed that ever since lockdown starts and I'm working from home, it's a lot harder to get into that mode. So I have to go through periods unconsciously, like, I'm not having Instagram on my phone because I need to devote my attention to this thing that I've noticed. And it's funny because I always used to, like, never understand people deleting Instagram, because the motto in my family was, so I've never had my phone taken away during exam periods. My parents felt it wasn't teaching me how to control my time and how to control, like, how I'm working around my phone, basically. Because if all you do is take your phone away from your child, you're teaching them that when exam period comes around, someone else will take responsibility for their marks. Someone will take their phone and do whatever. So I never had that. I always had social media. I slipped away whatever time I wanted during exams. I never had a problem with it, but for some odd reason, second year, here it is. It's like, now I actually have to do it. And in my head, I used to be like, why are you guys deleting Instagram? You just have to control yourself. But now I totally get it. I totally get it now. Different ball game.
I think, okay, to talk about WhatsApp, I do have WhatsApp on the Mac, but it's not in my dock. So it just never shows up unless I'm like, I put my phone away, but I know we have group chats where it's work related and I need to send someone a work related message. I do that, quickly end it, and then leave. But I think the reason most people are spending so much time on their phones is because of a pandemic where audio, the only way to interact with another human being is via your phone and social media. So I feel like that's one of the reasons my screen time has increased so much. Mm. Is because it's my, not only not like, social media just used to be my way to escape, but now it's also my way to just live life.
Yeah.
And that may or may not be a good thing.
I agree with you 100%. My Mac is set up for work just like your iPad. So I have all those things well hidden away, if I have it at all. Sorry, I've got someone at my door. But yeah, I have to use social media to keep up with the family and with the friends, but I also have no issue cutting it out because it repels me. The fact that I'm so easily addicted and I can't control myself, it's just something that I avoid naturally, just like anything that becomes taxing. I also hate hearing people's opinions. I hate the whole social media concept. Let's fight for popularity. So that repels me personally.
Yeah, I'm so turned off by social media and the fakeness. Mm-hmm. Like the idea that social media is just everyone's best version of themselves is so true. There's such a lack of reality and it can mess with your mind a lot, especially like when you can't actually get outside and be around real people.
Yeah.
And all you see is people living their best lives and you're sitting in your room and you're not living your best life and you just think there's something wrong with you, but actually there's nothing wrong with you because you take away the mask of Instagram and those people are actually living the exact same life. So Instagram basically creates this disconnect between what life is and what people are not, the world thinks life should be. Mm. And it's just really annoying and very bad to see all the time.
That's a really good comment. I've personally never felt like, I've never gone on Instagram, seen someone be like, oh my goodness, why isn't that me? Like, I've never felt compelled to compare myself to someone else in terms of looks. I felt compelled to compare myself to someone else in terms of work ethic. So someone posting your success, I'm like, excuse me, like, you know what I mean? It's like, why am I not posting your success? Like, I've noticed that I tend to get very high strung and competitive in that way, working on that. It has its pros and cons, honestly. But
Galan, she's acting you. She's acting you.
Dude, she's like, I want your bag. Give me your bag.
So I guess where I was going with this is the only time I felt this entire holiday like I saw a reel of highlights was when people posted that they were like on road trips on VAC, and I was literally in the house the whole time, because usually VAC would be my road trip time, and like not having that time and seeing someone else have the time, I was like, why is everyone getting out of the house? But when you think about it, it's not everyone, it's very few people actually. And even if that, like, it shouldn't matter how someone else spends their VAC. Like, if it's your VAC and you have plans, it shouldn't really matter. So that's
exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
right? Like, that's exactly what I'm talking about. I'm saying people are seeing their friends, for example, right? And so I was like, I want to see my friends and whatnot and that. And I'm not seeing my friends. I do want to see my friends, but I'm saying the amount of being bombarded with FOMO and not being able to enjoy those moments. But then I took a step back and I'm like, no, I'm actually enjoying my VAC exactly how I want to. I'm not working, which is a good thing. I'm running as much as I want to. I'm chilling. I'm actually doing everything I want to do, and it's making me happy. The thing that's not making me happy is opening up Instagram and then seeing all these people living an alternative life to my own.
Yeah.
And then that's suddenly making me sad. So it's not actually a problem with my own life because I'm doing what I want to do. It's just they make their life seem so much better seeing friends. Mm-hmm. And I just think that level of portrayal is so warping. And that's why Instagram gets really taxing for me at times, because it's just, I don't want that life, but they make their life look so good. Mm. And that makes you want it. That makes any sense. Maybe I'm not making sense.
You. I 100% get you. I had something to say. Anyways, so in terms of social media, oh yes, I've got it. The reason why it's so hard for me to delete Instagram is because I've built in news feeds into my everyday feed. So literally most items I scroll through are updates on global news. I've noticed that I post a lot of European Union, Australian, American, South American news. So I started following South African news channel like the Daily Maverick, ENCA. So I started reposting those a lot more as well. And so most of my feed is news. If it's not a friend posting something, it's just news, which is why I find it hard to delete Instagram, because I've curated in such a way that most of it is informative for me. Philosophy, news, whatever. And it's hard to let go when it's that case, but it's sometimes you need to, because you're using that as an excuse to stay on this social media platform that's literally taking away all your time that you could be using to like relax, read a book, eat an apple or something. But in as much as we've now talked about how you can consciously control for social media during like schoolwork times, you guys are two podcasters. Do you find that the amount of time you spend on social media correlates to the levels of creativity you have?
Is my mic on?
Yes, it is on.
For me, I think sometimes I get my inspiration from social media, because seeing what people are getting up to and seeing about all the new news and things that are happening, that's what inspires me to write or to have a conversation with Galant or make a podcast or whatever. That's the only stimulus I get right now, either way. So it's not like I can go outside and be like, oh, I saw this. So for me, social media does play a big role in that.
Yeah, I'm with Hector. Like, how many times do I, as ever as I message him, like, yo, I just saw this video and they brought up this interesting argument and we should talk about it on the show. When you actually started the podcast, I distinctly remember us being like, so we probably can, like, for this lockdown, because it's only going to be 2 weeks long, we'll need to make up some content, but then we'll go back to university and we'll live our lives and then we'll come with content each week. So that never happened. And yeah. So we have to come up with new content. We get that content through seeing what other people are doing online. And then we sort of put our own stamp on it in our own opinion. So it does help with creativity. But I think a very important thing is, what are you watching? If you're on YouTube and you're watching compilations of old Vines, that's not helpful. If you're on YouTube and you're watching TED Talks, and you're watching informative videos that increase your mind, like your mental capacity, those things will bring about interesting debates for the podcast. But if Hector watches Vine, which he loves to do, watch Vine compilations for hours, and he's like, I'm like, why did you watch this week? Vine. Like, we can't talk about Vine.
Debatable. Debatable.
Actually, we should. We actually should. Tears, write that down. A podcast topic. But my point, social media is only as good as you make it and how you curate your feed.
So we're talking about the feed. We're talking about influencers. We're talking about how people are curating this reel of highlights. In a video that I saw by Jared Lanier, again, I think it was in conjunction with the New York Times, the New Yorker, one of those things, he talks about how people should be reimbursed for their data. And I remember once thinking about, shouldn't African countries be reimbursed for the data their populations contribute to these multinational corporations based not in Africa? Because if you think about it, you're using the African population as a commodity. But then I realized, like, the argument, I think, has its pros, but the con is that you make the argument centered around Africa, which is always a good thing, but you're neglecting that it's the peril of many other non-African countries as well. South Americans also be made a commodity from companies that aren't based there, Australians, Europeans, all those things. And I guess what's coming down to is Jaron Lanier actually argues that people should be reimbursed for their data. So people should be able to see how much they'll be getting paid. People should be able to see that their new baby picture contributes to so many views, because they brought in so many new engagements, they're going to be paid in this way. But the problem I find with that is that it's almost like creating an influencer out of everybody. And so everyone's going to have this very highly curated life, and you're going to open Instagram and everything's going to be very plastic and very scripted. How do you guys think about reimbursing people for their data? And how do you guys think about people potentially leading lives according to a script because of those reimbursements?
Data is very important. It's your screen time and what you're watching and how you spend your time on your phone, on social media, is your vote. It's your voice. It's how you decide how the system moves. So in an argument, yes, you should be reimbursed, but also how can you possibly be reimbursed for your data? How do you go about that? So a lot of those companies do fund international people, like Amazon, for example. Amazon Web Services employs people from all around the world, and that brings in income, and they use data from customers. So the free flow of data is actually what makes the internet work. The fact that people don't get reimbursed for their data is the reason the internet works and works efficiently. That said, I think the companies are aware that data is a commodity. And I think that's why everyone is tightening up their ability to share data. Look at Apple. Their last stint for the last 4 years has been data security. Mm. And Safari doesn't let ads track you anymore, things like that. Google's doing the same thing with Chrome, and there's various Chrome extensions. Everyone's aware that your data is everything. I just don't know how we would be reimbursed for it, but I think it shouldn't just be sold to the highest bidder either. Mm. It should be valued because the data is what makes it better for everyone.
I agree with you. It doesn't feel like your data is valuable. I'm not sure what kind of reimbursements you are or is in theory here, but I feel like I use a lot of software and I do coding for Varsity. And the stuff is hard to compile. And I just feel like, you know, YouTube and Facebook and Instagram, people use it for convenience. They use it for function. That all of those software, those algorithms, it brings them joy. It brings them dopamine and serotonin. People use that for a reason. And that's not cheap to make or to distribute. So by using those services, it's free. But is it free? You are paying for those services by giving them your data. So what reimbursements do you really want?
I mean, the algorithm is a reimbursement. The fact that the algorithm works is your reimbursement. The fact that it gives you very good content back, content that you actually like, content that will impact you. That is the reimbursement of giving up your data. It's just sometimes you like other apps that don't deserve your data are getting your data, and that is the issue. Why is my YouTube data being used to fill out my Google ads on another website? That is the issue here. My YouTube data should be only used for YouTube. It shouldn't be showing up in a random ad for Takealot. If I go to Takealot's website, like that's just, it shouldn't be that.
I get you.
YouTube and Spotify, for example, they are free, but you can pay for it. And then it's like, okay, we'll just keep it to provide you your service. We won't sell your ads at all, blah, 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 blah. So there are ways to get around it, but you have to pay for it because nothing's free.
Mm.
That's just my view.
Oh, what's your view, Sunday?
What's my view? For the most part, Jaron Lanier seemed to be speaking to something that I thought about previously, but I didn't really like where it was going, as you may have hinted in the way I introduced the question. I think it, as much as it's very ironic because he seems like a very socialist person, and it seems that his solutions to all of these capitalist algorithm machineries are just to pay everyone, distribute money everywhere, which is a paradox in its own. But I'm very much with Matthew on it. When you have the option to pay for an app and you don't, you're consenting the fact that your data is the price that you will pay to get access to that service. And as someone who's on a free Spotify, I mean, I have been doing that. So I'm pretty much on Matthew's train. I think if you have a lot of self-awareness...
Hector, there's too much stuck in conversation here.
I think that there's a degree of self-awareness that you need to employ when you're in social media. I think what's unfortunate is that some people that are on social media don't have this information, don't have this knowledge or self-awareness, so they cannot make the choices accordingly. I think that could be the downfall. But when you educate yourself about what your data is being used for, what kind of data they're creating, what kind of social media habits you can build for yourself to control your social media impulses, the problem becomes less the corporation. They're providing you with entertainment and this really cool service. The problem becomes how you use that in your life, I think.
Yeah,
it's impulse control. You know.
Impulse control, indeed. So actually, as I said the last comment, I was thinking, because I have this book by Carl Jung on my desk, and it's called The Undiscovered Self. And one of the points he made in the opening chapters was about how one needs to interrogate their personal relationship with the religion that they're part of. And he used religion very openly. Religion is not just the Christian, Hindu, whatever. He talks about in the sense of like the relationship with your government, whatever. And I think this is what this boils down to, the relationship with your ideology, the relationship with your social media usage. You need to interrogate that and take responsibility. But again, education is a very powerful force that everyone has access to. But back to where we were going with this. So we talked about creativity. We talked about correcting for social media time under academic pressures. And I guess I wanted to edge into the topic of burnout. Have you guys ever burnt out? And when you did you notice that it coincided with a mindless scrolling phase or a death scroll phase?
When you said burnout, I was thinking of cars.
Yes.
Yes. On both accounts. No, I'm joking. I do not own a car. I wish I did. I can't do burnout. Mind is scrolling on social media. Yes, when you the more tired you get in your real life, the more attractive social media and escapism is, because it's like, oh, this YouTube video, low brain power, I could just take it in, not do much. So yeah, scrolling, doom scrolling definitely coincides with me getting more and more fatigued with work.
For me, I get agitated as I become more like before, as my mental health takes a heavier and heavier load. So I can't even sit down to watch YouTube video. I don't want to be near social media, like I said, it's already taxing as it is. So for me, it's actually, I almost pull away from everyone. That's like when Galant messages me and he's like, yo, you alive? And I'm like,
a very popular text that Galant sends people. Are you alive?
Yeah, that's me.
Okay, so I agree with you guys, but I don't know, doom scrolling is what, in the way I understand doom scrolling to like be a phenomenon, I've never like scrolled through. I understand doom scrolling to be like you're scrolling through all these like negative things about the world and it's like, oh no, and you just can't stop scrolling. I've never experienced that. I've always taken in all the news and all the negativity with a lot of interest as to, oh, I wonder why that's happening. The one time doom scrolling got to me was when there was a lot of GBV. So on Twitter, I think I go on Twitter like every once a week or every couple of days, because I think that in as much as I have a news feed on Instagram, Twitter has a better op-ed news presence. So I go there for like research papers, op-eds, whatever. I just follow a bunch of scientists, follow a bunch of like newspapers, fixed up. And people started posting about GBV. They started posting about a woman in Midrand who got abducted in front of her kids. So she parked the car like at the mall, she got out of it, and this VW 4x4 comes, pulled into the car, and she's gone. I don't know if they ever found her, but there were a lot of incidences where people were like reporting those accounts. And then shortly after that came the Put SA First movement. So Put SA First, I'm pretty sure it sounds a lot like Make America Great Again. And it basically goes along the same nationalist undertones. They're basically blaming the rise in human trafficking, if one, because a lot of experts feel like it's not necessarily rising, it's becoming a lot more visible because people are at home with nothing to do but doom scroll. The rise of GBV, and they're blaming it on foreigners. They're blaming it on Nigerians, on Zimbabweans. They were marching to the various embassies, giving them a list of demands. And, you know, I don't know if that's the way to go, but that there was a march about that. It's about how like foreigners need to stop human trafficking South Africans. And I don't think it's just foreigners. I think it's just indecent people, in my opinion. But I guess it all goes back to A, how doom scrolling can fuel such movements, and B, a Sunday doesn't really get affected by doom scrolling. What I do get affected by is mindlessly scrolling. Like not necessarily taking in the information. I'm just scrolling for the sake of pacifying what I'm avoiding at that moment. But to wrap it up, or to nearly wrap it up, we talked about whether someone can code for good, and we talked about how an algorithm cannot be inherently good or inherently bad. It codes, or it does the function that it was coded for. So the three of us here are creators. We're not necessarily famous or popular, but we do have an influence over the audiences that listen to us. What responsibility do you guys think that we have as creators on social platforms?
I think just promote healthy decisions and growth, which is something we speak a lot about on Two Mats, Second Conversation. And the converse of that, detest unhealthy or problematic behavior. You know, just if you witness a conversation that needs a positive influence, or if there's room for education, speak up rather than keep quiet.
Yeah, to MSC, to match that conversation, our goal is to make the world a better place, for lack of a less cliche term. But yeah, our responsibility to our listeners is to provide a holistic conversation, and a conversation that's going to uplift their life and break it down. Like, yes, promote healthy decisions, promote healthy coping mechanisms, talk about growth. If you make a mistake, don't just say, yes, I made a mistake, change and become better. That's what we're all about. We're all about becoming better, wiser, more informed, more humane, more empathetic human beings.
I agree with that. I back that. I've noticed a lot of your topics about how to be a better person, even though you tend to make it very funny and consumable, I guess, because if you talk about how to be a better person, and you know, I'm a fan of philosophy, but for the bigger audience, if you take Rene Descartes and you read it as Rene Descartes, it's not going to attract a lot of traction. People aren't going to relate because you're not making it basic and consumable and, you know, engageable, interactable. But talking about the aims of our podcast, I know that Raul and I already started this, we've been thinking about starting a podcast since June of last year. But what happened is we're so trapped up in school, we're like, is this the time to start it and then only post like once a year and vanish from sight? And we hadn't isolated the goals of the podcast, because the podcast we wanted to start last year was based more on the college experience, you know, like on like how to study and all those things, which we still have room to do. But this podcast came out in quarantine, and we felt like we needed a place to put our opinions and ideas. And we kind of wanted to get people thinking. I mean, I definitely don't think that we are at the peak of what we could be doing, but it's a start, and it's more important to start than to just keep fantasizing about whatever you want to do. But we're heading into term four now. It's the last stretch of the year. It's big exam time. Some people are going to be writing exams from term one and two, if I'm not mistaken, because of the pandemic. What advice do you guys have to those people who need that motivation for that last push?
As med students, you might agree with me, you might disagree with me. I don't really know what they teach you, but I believe mental health is as important as physical health. So do not
neglect
your mental health, please. And just find ways to live healthier. Force the balance between work and personal life if you have to. Find time to go outdoors and be active, pretty much. Do what you enjoy. That's really all I do.
How to be successful. Do we not have an episode on this, Davis?
I like, think we do. Wait, what, do we have a guest? Do we have a guest?
Oh, I think you did.
Yes.
I think you did have some.
If you guys go to @2Matt's Second Conversation on Instagram, or you go to 2Matt's Second Conversation on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you'll find an episode called How to Be Successful with the hosts of the Dialogue Podcast, including Rahil Samlong. So that's a pretty good episode. Go check it out. But just offer up my own two cents. Force the balance, like Hector said. He's a very smart man. Force the balance. I think knowing yourself, knowing when you're tired, that you need to sleep, and just weighing up, is it worth it really to pull an all-nighter? Will you just not be better off by going to sleep? You'll probably be better off going to sleep. Get outside. Fresh air is very good, especially if you're staying in the house all day. Get your body moving in some way, shape, or form. I'm not saying go down, comrades. I'm saying take a walk outside. Just a walk for 5 minutes will do you so good.
Matthew, I thought we were running comrades, though. I thought it was our thing.
Not everyone can run comrades yet.
Yet.
Start with walking outside for 5 minutes and then move out there. But seriously, get outside, breathe some fresh air, talk to friends, whether it be in person, safely, social distance, with a mask, or online. But just don't make everything about school. And I know that sounds weird, because it's like, this is about school though, Matthew. What are you talking about here? Like, we're trying to pass. But you'll find living a balanced life, which means you're not putting off work when you should be doing work, and not putting off life when you should be doing life, will be so much better. Stay alive, friends.
I could not agree more with this. And, you know, I've kind of had different experiences across the spectrum of my academic career. For my schooling years, I'd like to think I was balanced. I was part of the hockey team. I did some speech and drama. I was part of every single production that was on in my high school year. I was on there. So I like.
You were that girl.
I was that girl. Yes. It was stressful, but I did it.
Valedictorian.
Sorry?
Valedictorian.
Yes. I think
that. We didn't even have that. That's how bougie she is right there.
In
our school, we didn't have valedictorian.
We called it a ducks.
Oh, yeah. We had the ducks.
We did have that.
Yeah. So the thing is, I think I've always been balanced, and as much as I know that academics is the important one, I always managed to fit in the other bubbles in there and have fun with them. Because even when things got stressful with online learning, I just found time to have video calls with people, because I felt like, you know, you enjoy those things. You need to have the runs and the video calls, whatever. But I've definitely noticed that during lockdown, I had a phase where I was so academic centric that it was to my detriment. But we're out of that phase now. And I think that when you say to someone, be balanced, to someone who's very in that phase, it sounds like, are you telling me that I can't do academics? You don't understand, that's all I have to do now. The chances are, the reason why you're doing academics only is because you're so burnt out, that your productivity is low and things are taking you longer. That's what was happening to me. And then you feel like, oh, I can only do this when literally you just need to go take a break. Just take an afternoon off and you'll probably come back and finish lectures in an hour, and then like the 3 hours it's taking you. So that was my experience.
You are more than your career. You are more, like, that's the thing I've learned
in
this pandemic. You are more than your career or your schoolwork or anything like that. You are more than that. You're a human being with feelings and passions and emotions, and you need to have those things realized in order to be a person. And when you are a person, you will have a good career. And I can promise you that. So you are more than just your studies or your work, ladies and gentlemen.
Force that separation.
Guys, one last question. It's actually coming into me now. Do you guys ground your identity in what you study? Like, do you say, hi, I'm a medical student, or hi, I'm an informatics student? Because I've never liked that opening line. It's, hi, I'm a Sunday, this is what I like. And then we'll get to the medical.
That's student. A loaded question. Yeah. It depends on the environment.
Because that will say, yes, I'm a medical student.
I think it depends on the situation.
It depends on what you're passionate on, right?
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Passionate about, like, rather.
I mean, if I meet someone, I'm going to be like, hi, I'm Matthew. You're going to ask me what I do. I think it's not wrong to say I study X, Y, and Z because you spend so much time. But it's not like I'll be like, I'm also a host of a podcast. I also run a lot. I also do X, Y, and Z. But I feel like it's aesthetic. If I'm at a networking conference, I'm going to put my career forward. But if I'm with friends, I'm going to be like, yo, what do you do for fun? I'm going to be like, I run or I host the podcast with my friend or whatever. Like, then work won't really come up. It depends on the social situation. But who I define myself as a person, I define myself as everything. Medicine is my passion. So I'll be like, I'm a med student, I'm a runner, a podcaster, I'm a friend, a brother, I'm an uncle. All those kinds of things will be part of the description list. But I think it's very important not to root yourself in either one of those identities. You have to space yourself across. Anything can be taken away from you at any moment, and you don't want to fall apart. Mm.
I agree. I often start with the I'm a writer and podcaster, and then the rest unfold from there. Then we'll go into the running. Then we'll eventually get into the medical part. And the medical part is important, but I feel like, I don't know, I feel like if you ask me, what do you do? What do you study? That's where it comes in. I don't think I'll throw it in the first 5 minutes, maybe after an hour or so, depending on the seriousness of the conversation, it'll come up.
It's the most boring part of myself. I'm not going to lie. Like, it's the least interesting part of what I do with my time.
I think it's
what I study.
When you actually graduate and it's like, oh yeah, I just saved a life today, you know, no big deal.
I only save someone's mind so that they can go back to their kids. It's just, you know, nothing big. I only save the life of the future cure of cancer. Like,
yeah,
you know.
No, I just went to
no biggie.
Yeah, no biggie. It's fine. Anyway,
no, I only saved the president's life. Like,
I only saved the take a lot from a bug.
And by a bug, I mean the mosquito. I'm talking about the delivery man. And
guys, you know, speaking of physicians, the president's physician has given him two very controversial treatments for coronavirus. He got a Regeneron monoclonal antibody, 8 grams. That's very experimental. People are very worried because you don't experiment on a president. And he's recently received remdesivir. So people are like, is he receiving special treatments as a president, or is he deteriorating faster than the media has told us? That's Donald Trump, president of the United States, by the way. So, interesting.
Did Ramaphosa get COVID? No, I don't know about this.
That's why I had to like clarify.
That's why I was like,
yeah.
Hector, wait, didn't answer the question, David. What do you define yourself as?
I don't know, just a student. It depends on the person. Because like if I meet someone's parents, for example, they want to know, like, do I have a career? Or are you a waste of someone's, like, my child's time or whatever?
Parents aren't judgmental.
They are, especially grandparents. The most
judgmental. That's what you have to throw in what you study, opening line.
Yeah. Other than that, I don't know. Just a student. They can ask further questions. And people tend, for you guys, it's easy. It's easy for you guys. The follow-up question for me is always, what's that? So it's always a story, and then they still don't get the description. So,
but that's more interesting though, because like they're like, oh yeah, I know the medical student, there's no more conversation. Then what? That's boring. Whereas they can ask you and you can have a whole conversation about that. So you already have a topic right there,
pretty much. I guess
I agree with that. And with that, I'm so happy to have had you guys on the show. Really enjoyed the convo spread out over 3 Zoom calls, but we got it done. And I'm looking forward to having you guys back on the show. Are there any closing remarks that you guys want to give us?
I really enjoyed coming on your show. I've been a long-time listener. When I normally listen to my podcast when I'm sleeping, when I go to sleep and when I wake up, I mean. So I really enjoy listening to the show, and I feel honored to be a guest on it.
Going to plug yourself there, Tinder.
At Matthew Hector, HEC2R on Instagram. Other than that, Two Matt Stuck in Conversation. That's my baby, our baby.
Our baby.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me and us.
Yeah. You can my find husband. Me at... Okay, calm down. Don't ruin my opportunities here. You can find me at Matthew Gallant, that's Gallant underscore on the Instagram. You can find us at 2Matt's Second Conversation. All the plugging I've done. Oh, yeah, sorry. Check us out. Thank you so much for having us on the podcast. I think this is part one, hopefully, of a many, many episodes on this podcast. And it's great to be here and bring some of our spice and disorganization to your very informative podcast.
So. Maybe one day we'll do an in-person recording. Yes.
That
next
would be year, wild.
Social distancing with Mark. Yes.
Sure.
Yeah. Amazing. Yes.
After I win our race.
Excuse me. My viewers have been increasing for like this entire week.
We can have a podcast right then and there on the grass. We can have a pre-race podcast, a post-race podcast. We can even have a podcast during the race for those who feel cocky. Tommy, how you feel? I'm feeling great.
She says, cruising at 4 minutes per K.
Wow.
I'm kidding. Yeah. I'm not kidding, actually. I aspire to do that. Anyways, thank you guys for coming on. And I cannot wait to have you guys on. To all you guys listening to this, thank you for listening. I hope you took something away from it. And please like and comment at the Dialogue Podcast on Instagram. And we will see you soon.